I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Ho, ho, holy shit. It's almost Christmas time. Jeremy here from Sick Boy Podcast. And just a quick little announcement before we toss it into what very well might be one of my favorite episodes of the year 2019. I just wanted to kind of pop on here and let you all know that for the very first time in our 4 years of existence, myself, Brian, and Taylor are going to take a break. We're gonna take the holidays to just kind of kick back and relax. So the next two Mondays, Monday, December 23rd and Monday, December 30th, we will not be putting out a new episode, but we will be putting out a select episode from back in the day, something that tickles our fancy. So you can expect us back with new content, new episodes on the day after my birthday, January 6th, 2020, where I will be a 32-year-old human, which is very exciting, and I'm starting to actually feel old. Anyway, I hope you enjoy this week's episode. It was a doozy. We sat down with Stephanie, our new friend, who is a physiotherapist, in particular, a pelvic floor physiotherapist. I'm sure you know as much as I do. It's always a delight for the three of us to sit down and talk to someone, especially someone who knows a lot about the female anatomy. Or vaginas and people with vaginas, because myself, Brian, and Taylor, we're cis men and we don't have vaginas. So we are fascinated by the subject. And Stephanie, she brings the goods. It is a very fascinating conversation. And I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. And happy holidays to all of you. We love each and every one of you. And I hope you stay safe. And I hope you have a wonderful time with family and friends and soak it all up. Eat good food, drink good drinks, and open those presents, but don't give in to consumerism and waste. Okay, well, you know what, this is not the platform for that. Okay, hope you enjoy this week's episode. Love you all. Bye.
Welcome to Sick Boy, a podcast that talks about what it's like to be sick. This week's guest is Stephanie Brown. She talks to the guys about their pelvic floor and kegels. Let's talk about it.
That it was good.
That it existed in here at this time.
That it was new.
Oh, that it was somebody's.
That it was new.
Oh,
okay. Yeah.
It's so weird to hear my voice in these things.
If it's tripping you out too much, feel free to take them off.
Yeah,
you don't have to wear them.
I kind of like it. It's like, it sounds like you're on a podcast.
All right.
We've been doing it for a long time.
I want to start.
I was in Starbucks before we came, and the guy was like, any exciting plans for tonight? And I was like,
fucking Starbucks,
oh man, your
man.
Energy is so much right now.
And you were like, vaginas!
You should have been like, well, actually.
I was like, no, just going to work.
You didn't take that opportunity in public to
make
say,
somebody really uncomfortable.
Well, I'm actually going to go talk to a stranger about how, for her job, she tends to stick her fingers in people's buttholes and vaginas. Because I would definitely.
Well, I don't know if I would have known if we had had this conversation already and somebody asked after I had been there, then I'd probably tell them all the things that I learned. But
well,
like, I don't really think about
like,
it too much before.
Just hang on a minute.
But I was like, oh, and they were like, oh, what a bummer. And I was like, no, I actually like what I do for work. And they were like, oh, is it cool? I was like, oh, well, it's a media thing. And they're like, what type of media thing? And I was like, oh, fuck, stop
well,
asking
media
questions.
Thing, there's microphones involved. They're like, oh, tell us more.
Yeah.
Well, I do feel like having dropped that bomb that we're about to talk to someone who uses their hands in orifices for their job is probably leaving some people wondering, what the fuck are we talking about today? Stephanie, why don't you just like let us know your title? What would you What are you?
I didn't realize that was the start of the podcast.
I didn't either.
Oh, we're in. Okay. We're in, baby.
We're in. No pun intended.
That was just gonna say
we are in
good.
Deep.
Whoa, geez. Took it to the next level.
Index finger deep. Maybe even deeper. I don't know. We're about to find
middle
out.
Finger deep?
Maybe.
That's like a quarter inch deeper.
All right, let's just get let's get there. What are we talking about?
Okay. So who I am, I guess, right?
Yeah.
My name is Stephanie Brown and I'm a pelvic floor physiotherapist. So essentially, I mean, to say it the nice way would be that we do internal, vaginal, and rectal exams.
That is the nicest way. That sounds like the nicest way you could put it.
I want people to still come see me after this podcast.
Well, I was wondering.
You're talking to three dopes who know nothing.
Oh, God.
But I was actually, and not to like come at you with questions right away because we've barely let you even talk yet, but I wasn't sure that you had to do internal exams to understand what somebody's pelvic floor is actually like. Like, do you have, I don't know anything about
you
this
ask
yet,
but let's
start from the very beginning. What is a vagina?
But you just said that you do internal exams and I think my understanding is that not a lot of people know like the importance of the pelvic floor.
Well, how about this? Let's start with this.
So
let's start with what is the pelvic floor?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go there first. I should have brought my pelvis for you guys.
I want to know about the
internal. You didn't bring your pelvis?
After.
Well, that's a different episode. So what is the pelvic floor? So basically, like the best way to imagine it in your head is as like a little hammock or a little sling. So you're going to imagine that, and then you're going to imagine that sitting at the base of the pelvis. And it's the same for you guys as it is for girls. The only difference is that you have testicles, so you have more support. That's why men don't typically have as much like leakage as women might.
More support in what terms? Like because
testicles like have a lot more muscles around them and more support around your urethra than we
okay.
do.
Oh, okay. So that hammock that you're referring to at the base of the pelvic floor is. Or at the floor of the pelvis, pelvic floor is a hammock of
muscle
of musculature that is there to basically just like allow all of the parts of the body within the pelvis to function properly.
Yeah, and to have support.
So
we'll give a little like anatomy here without pelvis. So your pubic bone is at the front of your pelvis, right?
Right.
So we all have that.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have your sit bones, which are the two bones in your bum that we're all sitting on right now.
Like if someone is sitting at home listening to this or in your car, you pulled your like the fleshy parts of your butt like back behind you and sat up nice and tall, you're going to feel the sits bones like right up on top of them.
Right in there.
Can we just clear the air right now? Is it the sits bones?
I think it's
technically.
Sits. I think it's sits.
Is it?
Sits
they're called
bones.
Sits. Technically, they're called your ischial tuberosities.
Right.
Yeah.
But is saying sits bones?
Sits bone. So it's like S-I-T-Z.
Oh.
Oh, really? I thought it was like sits, like you sit on them. So they're
mind blown. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Because, like, as a yoga teacher, I've been hearing people say that for like
a
fucking decade.
And you're just like, idiots. Yeah. It's sit bones.
I've always said it too.
Basically.
I've always said it sounding like sit plural.
Yeah.
Sits because I heard other people say it. And I was like, well, there must be two of them.
And I know it more as the issue of tuberosity more than I did sits bones. I didn't know there was a Z on there. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So
thank you.
Sits bones. So, if you were like sitting in your car or in a chair and you literally put your hands on your bum, those are the two like bony bones you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And then your coccyx or your tailbone is kind of like the back. Mm-hmm. So, all the muscles attach at like that pubic bone, the sits bones, and then back to the tailbone.
And that's the pelvis.
That's the pelvic floor.
Right. That's all the pelvic floor.
That's
right.
Where all the muscles
attach.
Yeah.
Sure.
So they have kind of five main functions. So the first one would be like to support your bladder and your bowel and like any function to do with bladder and bowel. So your ability to hold your pee, your ability to pee when you want to pee, to not leak at all.
Holding your pee is a muscular thing, not a bladder contracting.
Definitely two. So that we kind of have like two sphincters there. One at the neck of your bladder that does the majority of the control.
Okay.
It's like an automatic response, just like you breathe or your heart beats. That one.
And a sphincter is just like basically like a junction,
muscular valve,
like a junction, like a valve where you could have them there's lots of them throughout
there
the body.
Right. Yeah, you have like valves in your
heart. Like your throat, right? Is your throat one?
Well, it's a bit of a different sphincter, but it's still kind of like an, I guess, an orifice in a sense. Like they all have muscle around them.
Okay.
So yeah, to get back to the bladder. So you have that one at the neck of the bladder that's completely controlled by your brain. And then we have one closer to like where the pee exits the urethra, and our pelvic floor has some support in controlling that one.
Okay. So if you wanted to engage your pelvic floor, which I hear all the time in yoga class, is there like a certain like muscle that you can like try to flex that, that like guys would be able to think about using that would be actually flexing the pelvic floor?
Ever heard of a Kegel, Bri?
Yeah, well, I have, but I don't understand what it means to do a Kegel for like a guy.
For a guy.
I think a Kegel, is the same for everybody in terms of what you're actually doing. Mm-hmm. But so, and I like, you will definitely be able to explain this. But the thing that I learned from you is that I thought a Kegel was just like, I know when I say it, everyone just like, everyone's nose, nostrils just like flare because they're like, oh, I'm doing it too. It's like when you kind of hold your pee or hold your butthole, you know, where your butthole goes like, I thought that was a Kegel.
Well, how it goes.
That's the sound of me.
But it's way deeper than that.
So I guess my question is for you, because you said, you know, you use the word Kegel to talk about that.
Right.
What's like, I kind of thought before, I don't know where I heard this before, but I thought like, oh, if I want to engage my pelvic floor as a guy, I like squeeze the tip of my dick. And like
with your
like
fingers,
almost
pinch it.
yeah. No, but almost like if like you were trying to like cut off a stream of pee.
So that is what I thought a Kegel was, but I've learned that a Kegel is also engaging your like lower abdominal muscles, and for people that. I was like, oh, it's Mula Bunda.
Yeah.
Like that is a Kegel.
That's why you do those two lats. Like Uddiyana, I don't know the names of them, but you
Uddiyana,
do like.
Uddiyana Bunda is like the lower abdomen, like just below the belly button, kind of like the in and up in the navel. Yep. And then Mula Bunda is more from like, is more of the.
From within.
Is more of the, more of the, more pelvic floor sort of, what's the real term for your taint?
Perineum.
What's the real
taint? I never heard that.
It's
your perineum.
It's the space between your perineum.
Yes,
it's called the perineum.
The space between your ball sack and your butthole.
Yeah,
or your
vagina
and your butthole.
Yeah,
that's called
the taint. That's new. I learned something.
Well, when I explain it in yoga,
you didn't learn something. You learned. You remember earlier when you were like, I think the nice way of putting it is this. Yeah. You just learned the shitty way of saying it.
Do not say that.
No, and I don't say that in yoga either. When I explain it, I explain it in the way of using the muscles, like when you're talking about like, oh, contracting, as if you're trying to kind of holding your pee. And but when we talk about it in yoga, we go about it in saying like, you know, the sort of the same action as holding in your pee, or kind of like clenching your butt a little bit, but that those are almost, and correct me if I'm wrong, that those are almost like peripheral results of the pelvic floor strengthening. So in yoga or engaging. So in yoga, we kind of talk about how in an ideal world, you wouldn't actually do those two things. You'd kind of try to isolate the pelvic floor a little bit more specifically so that you're not over tightening or over engaging like parts that you don't really need to for the purpose of what a yoga practice is for, which isn't a whole other conversation. But
you guys aren't wrong in using those cues.
Okay.
So like when I am assessing someone, so when we're doing an internal, we basically 30 to 40% of women don't Kegel right. Like, and that number is probably even higher really, but
right.
For the reasons we all just talked about, because people have no idea how to get those muscles to come on. So there's like a gazillion different cues that you can use.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll usually teach people. So when we think of pelvic floor, if you think of like that pubic bone at the front and tailbone at the back, that sling runs between those two bones. So I'll get people to try to think, okay, I want you to think of holding your pee. Imagine you really have to pee and you're trying to hold it. So that's contracting around the urethra.
Mm-hmm.
And then for women, vaginally,
more at the front.
Yeah.
Yep. Right at that pubic bone. And then I'll say, okay, imagine a blueberry right at the entrance of the vagina, and you're going to try to gently pick it up and pull it inside. So all the pelvic floor is always like squeeze and lift.
Like a ping pong show in Thailand.
Yeah. Like a ping pong show.
I don't know. I want to know about that.
Well, just Google it.
I've heard. I've never been to Thailand. I don't know.
Stephanie, later, Google it. And everybody who's listening now, pause and Google it.
Don't do it.
Oh my God, don't.
I didn't go last time I was in Thailand, but I will next time.
Ping pong.
So, anyway, sorry, blueberry. Yeah. Lift the blueberry.
You picked that blueberry up, and during the I Hear You series, actually, Francesca said it perfectly because it was, you're trying to pick a blueberry up and keep it a blueberry, not turn it into jam. So it's a gentle, really, I saw funny. You laugh.
Yeah, I laughed. I thought that was fucking brilliant.
Which connotes like a really, it's like a large gentle. Amount of control.
Yes, yeah. Because like, otherwise we get all glutes, all abdominal right. muscles. And it's a very like gentle lift. So that's kind of like the middle. And then the back is literally like, try to imagine holding in a fart. Like try to imagine right. holding in
okay.
gas.
Okay, wait, but with the blueberry thing, as I don't have a vagina, I'm not sure like how much control does like the average person have? Like if somebody didn't like go to see a pelvic floor physiotherapist, would the average woman be able to like kind of conceptualize what that would be like to pick up a blueberry? Very gently.
And it's hard for everyone. That cue doesn't work for everybody. So we have like a whole slew. So another one is like, try to imagine drinking a milkshake out of a straw and sipping it through your vagina. So other ones will be like, imagine a jellyfish, like how a jellyfish opens and closes, or how a flower opens and closes. And like on the close, we're trying to get them to cue. So we go through, I might go through like 6 different cues with someone before they actually get it right.
But really what you're essentially asking them to do through whichever visualization is to contract your vaginal muscles.
Mm. Yep.
Right.
Yep. When I was really young, and I talk about this a lot when I try to explain what it is to create those neural pathways to actually tell a singular muscle or a small group of muscles to do something.
I know exactly what you're going
to
talk about.
This is always how I refer to it because so when I was like maybe 12 or 13, one of my best friends, he could like bounce his pec muscles up and down, like, and just his pec muscles. And I was very fascinated by this. And he's like, yo, Taylor, check this out. And he shows me and I'm like, whoa, that's the fucking coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. And so I'm like, well, I want to do that. So I'm looking at my chest. I look down at my chest and I'm trying to do it and I can't. But I can do it. If I try to flex just my pec, I can, if I clench my fist, flex my bicep, my chest will then turn on. I've got to turn on this like big group of muscles to turn on the one muscle that I actually want to. And then over time, as I think about it and I sit there and it's literally is like, for me anyway, sitting there and like almost meditating on it, like trying to concentrate so hard on just that one muscle doing the one thing I want it to do and not having to use all the other muscles that surround it and support it until like, you know, 2-3 weeks go by and I'm just like every day, I'm just committed to this. I'm staring at my chest, like trying to do it. And then all of a sudden, and like it does it once, and then you go, oh yeah, doom, doom, and eventually I go into practice one day, and I'm like, yo, dude, check it out.
And then you met Kyla, and you were like, I'm going to court her, and you went, bop, 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 and she was like, I love you,
and you're
like,
been together for a decade,
yeah,
and so that's but gradually over time, it goes from having to turn on this like this group of muscles that like really there's all these peripheral ones that you don't really want to use. They're not really doing, they kind of help you to know what you're turning on, or they're in the. It's if you flex all these, then you'll end up flexing the one that you want. But eventually we kind of want to let the other ones fall by the wayside and just have control of this one muscle. And over time and with practice. So when Brian asked that question about like, does the average woman that you see, and when you're talking about like Kegel exercises and engaging in the blueberry and whatever the cues are that you're giving, I'm kind of imagining that the answer for most people is probably that there's not a whole lot of control, or if they can turn it on, it's not
coordinated.
Yeah. It's very kind of like sharp. Like the edges are sharp. Like like there's not a whole lot of finesse.
Yeah. You'll usually see like their whole body. Like you see their glutes, you see their core. So exactly what you said, you just trained muscle memory so that your brain could go, okay, yeah, I need to isolate my pec muscle. Mm. So when I first start seeing people, oftentimes it's like, their whole entire body is like trying to contract their pelvic floor. And I'm like, you don't need to try that hard.
Yeah. Like everything, like from their feet to their shoulders is like clenched.
Trying so hard. Yep.
And they will get it.
Yep.
If and they do all that.
The more you practice and the more you isolate it. So I teach a lot of like breathing and deep breathing and like trying to connect and like going into a room and like spending some time. And they're like, man, I didn't think this would be so hard. But I'm like, you're trying to isolate a muscle that you don't often think of like that.
I know.
I was going to change topics because
I want to just clarify something. Like, I know that we are talking, Because so we're talking to you as a physio, a pelvic floor physiotherapist. Mm-hmm. We're talking about what the pelvic floor is, how to engage the pelvic floor. And I know we're referring to, for the most part, referring to people with vaginas and how that relates to them. But men also have a pelvic floor. But why? So you kind of touched on with like the incontinence thing, but like, why the fuck is it important for people to know about their own pelvic floor? And like, what falls under the umbrella of like pelvic floor health? Or like, who are the people, who are your clients? Like who should be seeing you?
Everyone.
Right.
Dude,
legitimately.
I'll tell you the easy answer. Have you ever read a Cosmo magazine? It's like 10 reasons why a stronger pelvic floor will lead to better sex.
Well, you know? So that, I mean, that
do
is,
your crunches.
That is one. That's which, probably one example.
I believe that doing crunches doesn't really help strengthen your pelvic floor, but anyway,
not so much. But so yeah, so we got like way off track there when we were talking about like the functions of the pelvic floor.
Yeah.
So we're gonna like rewind like 20 minutes to that bladder and bowel function.
Right.
The second major function is sexual function. So if you have a strong pelvic floor, it like you are meant to be trying to do Kegels as you're having intercourse. So without even knowing that you're doing them, your pelvic floor is contracting because that's what helps women orgasm. It's what makes intercourse feel better. It's what gives you more sensation. So I'll see people that one end of the spectrum is like they can't have sex because it's so painful. Mm. And the other end is like they have no sensation with sex whatsoever.
Right.
Or they can't orgasm. Or so some of those come into that. The other function is like the support of your organs. So we talked about that little hammock that's in that pelvis. Literally your bladder, your bowel for you guys too. For women, we have the uterus in there as well. So those muscles are like holding all that stuff inside. So if there's weakness or issues there, then for women, we are subject to pelvic organ prolapse. So that's when those organs start to descend and can actually like exit the vagina.
Which we had a conversation about that not too long ago.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. That was the, a little bit of like background. I heard you speak, you gave like a 30 minute seminar at a podcast launch that my wife had produced called I Hear You. And when you were speaking, You dropped pelvic organ prolapse. You mentioned vaginismus. You mentioned PVD, provoked vestibulodynia. Did I fuck that up?
When I was driving here, I'm like, what am I going to get? I was like, I'm going to get them to say these three things fast because it'll be really fucking funny. Yeah,
yeah. And but you were saying all these things, and I was going, we talked about that on the podcast. We talked about that on the podcast. We talked about that on the podcast. But not once in any of those conversations did the term pelvic floor physiotherapy. Mm.
Maybe
come
a little out. Bit. Maybe a little bit in vaginismus.
Maybe,
but not a lot.
Yeah.
Two episodes did, but only for like 5 minutes.
Yeah. And like barely that.
I think we were like pelvic floor yoga, and then like that.
Yeah, that was it. So it was like this moment where I was like, God, this is like this missing link that I think a lot of people might not know about. I mean, at least I feel like I didn't know shit.
So many people don't know. Mm-hmm. So many people don't even know we exist. And even like there's lots of physicians and like specialists that don't exactly know everything that we're capable of doing. So.
Right.
And is there and kind of in the way of like of why a lot of people don't, and again, like correct me if I'm wrong, that people don't know how to engage it or like use it the way that is like a healthy way of kind of, you know, keeping things engaged and engaged properly is, and something that I go to and when I'm speaking to the pelvic floor in my yoga teaching is that it's not a muscle you can see. And so when you can't see it, it's very challenging to conceptualize making it do what you want it to do.
Yeah, whereas, like the psoas.
You know, it's very, you know, you have your hand, it's like, well, clench your fist. And you can see it do it. You know, you have a very, it's easier to do when you can see the muscle.
And I'll get people
happening.
To, like, if they're comfortable inserting a finger, I will ask them to, like, go home and try to insert a finger in your own vagina and do those things. And you should feel a tension and a tightness around your finger. Mm-hmm. So for some people, that is useful. Also when I'm doing my assessments, I'm literally having them do all this stuff while I'm doing an internal exam so I can give them that feedback. Mm-hmm. We also have different machines that we use. So one's called biofeedback. It looks like basically a little tampon essentially that we can insert in the vagina and it picks up on a like electrical activity in muscle. And then that's transferred to, basically like a screen or a graph. and it shows them when they're contracting and when they're not. Mm. So I very rarely have to use that, just because I find, like, just with the manual feedback from me and them doing it, we get it.
Kind of like a grip test for the vagina.
The reason why I was asking about the internal exam, and the reason why I wanted to have this conversation so bad with you, is because my girlfriend's an athlete, and she went to see a pelvic floor physiotherapist a few weeks ago. And she's also a yoga teacher. And after the session, she was talking to me and she was like, whoa, I was so surprised. There were so many things that I didn't know. And, pelvic floor physiotherapy is really important. And she didn't know about it, but she was under the impression before that it was going to be an internal exam, and then it wasn't.
Okay.
So I think she was curious as to, like, why wasn't it? Can they tell if it's your pelvic floor? I mean, she had some specific symptoms that probably told them that she had a weaker pelvic floor, but she's an athlete. So she was, it's not that her pelvic floor is weaker. I think it's that her transverse abs and her abdominals are a lot stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a common issue in athletes?
It can be, for sure. And, like, that pelvic floor maybe isn't coming on or firing properly. So it's individual. There are times when I don't necessarily do an internal. It's rare that I don't. It may be because the person's just so uncomfortable with it. Sometimes it can be because if there is an active infection of any sort, then we won't do an internal exam. If first trimester pregnancy, so hopefully, surprise! first trimester pregnancy, we don't.
That would be the funniest thing. If that was, if you just got a text right now.
I'm texting it right now. No, I'm just kidding.
So there can be reasons why an internal is not done. The way I like to explain it to people is, like, if you went to see a physiotherapist because your back was sore, if that physio didn't put their hands on you and touch you and get you to move and do things, then you'd probably be like, well, I don't really feel like much happened here. So like we talked about, pelvic floor is inside. So I always say to people, the only way to really truly know what's going on with the muscles is to do an internal exam to feel what's going on. But there are definitely sometimes reasons why we wouldn't or couldn't do an internal.
Yeah. Right. And then the second thing I was really curious about was, why did you get into pelvic floor physiotherapy?
Yeah, that's a good question. I get asked that a lot. So I've been a physio for 13 years now, and I've pretty much worked, I feel like, in almost every area of physio. So I've worked in, like, acute medicine and ICU and emergency and long-term care and sports clinics with, like, elite athletes. And then I got pregnant, and after my first baby, I had a pretty traumatic labor and delivery with her, and I probably was about a 9-year practicing physio at this point. And after her, was really active when I was pregnant with her, went back to exercise right away, and I got on the treadmill and I started leaking. And I was like, yeah, okay, like, yeah, I had a baby, so I'll go and go to the bathroom. Didn't think much of it.
Leaking pee or, yeah, okay.
Yeah. And then every time I do, like, sit-ups or crunches, like, my tailbone would be so sore, I literally, like, could hardly get off the mat. And as a physio, I still was like, man, I just had a baby. Like, I'm sure this is all going to go away. And, like, a year and a half later, I remember one day I was going for a run with my brother, and I was outside. I had a light gray pair of Lulus on and literally was peeing in my pants the entire time I was running with my brother. And thankfully we're close enough that I was like, man, I need your sweater. Like, there's pee all over my pants. Like, give me your sweater to tie around me. And he was cool. We were good. So again, like most women, I just chalked it up to, like, this is probably a normal part of childbirth. And then got pregnant with my second child, and my pelvic pain was so bad when I was pregnant with him, and my incontinence was so bad that if I sneezed or coughed or laughed, I'd literally have to change my pants because I would wet myself. And so it was actually my midwife that sent me to see a pelvic floor physio. And after that appointment, I left and I was mind blown. Like, I remember going back to some of my physio friends and be like, oh my God, like, this was incredible. Like, I learned all of this stuff and I'm a physio, and there was stuff that
so
I didn't know.
It was all new. It wasn't like, was it a mix of new and like, oh, duh, or was it?
There was a lot of like, oh my God, when I never put those two things together. Right. So when I went to Dalhousie, we learned what the pelvis was, but we didn't learn a lot about pelvic floor. I'm happy to say now that the university spends an entire week on pelvic floor. So I have a colleague that goes into the university, spends a whole week teaching it. they don't do internal exams, but they at least learn much more about it than we did when I graduated. So I saw this pelvic floor physio and was mind blown. And I was like, oh my God, like more people need to know about this. I should not. I remember saying to her the whole time, why did no one ever tell me this? Like, why did no one ever refer me to you? And like, why was I thinking all of this was normal?
What was her answer? Like was let me rephrase that. Has because it seems like pelvic floor physio, considering that they never really taught you a lot about it at Dow.
Yes.
It seems like this concept of or this like practice of pelvic floor physio or like the idea of it in the medical community is like still like relatively new.
Yeah.
It because of that, is it viewed upon by some, or have you come across this where it's kind of like, oh, that woo-woo shit?
No, definitely not.
It's like 100% like, oh, no, this is like the science backs, like, is there, yeah, and we fully support it.
And support it.
Right. Yeah. But like, are there like those old doctors, like old fucking old school dudes that are just like,
meh.
I don't know. You know, like, do you guys face that very much?
I haven't personally faced that.
That's good.
I think like the people that have kind of been around doing pelvic floor physio, the people that are teaching these programs right now have been doing it in Quebec actually for about 25 years. So it's been around, but I mean, in the grand scheme of physiotherapy practice, it's newer, I suppose, but there's lots of research to support the efficiency of it and like how much we can improve people's quality of life and change some of these symptoms. So after I had my son, I literally did my course like 3 months after I gave birth to him. And then I've been doing it exclusively ever since. So.
And it kind of like, I mean, like I know like you've been like seeing somebody, you're like what you call physio for your CF is different from like what we call physio when we're talking about.
That's a bit of a different physiotherapist.
Different physio,
yeah,
but like a we've all seen physios and like I have seen, I mean, just the same way that you can go to a hospital and you can get a doctor who basically doesn't even look at you, just looks at a chart and tells you what you did. Then you get a doctor who's like this, you go to a physio and you know, I've gone into physio clinics and I've gone, my shoulder hurts and they stick needles in my shoulder and they leave the room and put the electrodes on. 20 minutes later, I leave. And then I've had like the physio that I've been working with now, Drew Stratton, is like so hands-on and like figuring everything out, always looking at things. I'll say something one day and the next time I see him, he'll be like, I read these research papers on this. And like, I was thinking that, and it takes like that type of person like him or like you to go like, oh, I had this experience and now I'm like going to do this deep dive into this like section of physio that, you know, maybe hasn't been paid attention to as much as it should have. And I'm really interested because of my personal experience. Like it takes people like you guys to go in that direction and to push that and to, you know, to come here and to talk about it so that, you know, all the people listening to this that are like, I mean, fuck, who knows how many women are listening to this who are like, I had a baby and I've been peeing my pants for the last however long and I never knew why.
But the crazy thing is it's not even people who had babies because, like your experience was very similar to Maddie. She was running and was like, oh, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And,
oh, okay,
and,
right.
But that could be her water breaking, which we still haven't figured that out.
Jesus Christ.
Because you might be a dad. Remember?
It could be.
Remember, which, you could be a daddy.
Yeah, you never know.
Right.
And, yeah. And I see so many different women.
So is that the common denominator between like women who end up seeing physiotherapists or pelvic floor physios is that, you know, they're like, they end up leaking and they're like, what the hell's going on?
Some of the time it's very so much. Like I see women who are 18 that you know, have pain with sex. It's common. Most of the people that come to see me that age is either pain with intercourse or pain inserting tampons or tailbone pain or they're leaking. So a lot of like elite athletes will have incontinence or can have incontinence, and it's more linked to, it can be weakness in the muscle. It can be like a lot of tension. So a lot of dancers, gymnasts, figure skaters, gymnasts are known to have issues with their pelvic floor. And it's like the postures they assume and the way that they hold themselves in different positions, and it leads to tension there.
Right.
So you don't have to have just had a baby. It's just that a lot of trauma happens after having babies. So you can be prone to more of this, but I see girls that have never had kids. I see girls that have just had babies or that are pregnant. And then I see women who've been fine like their entire life. And then menopause hits.
I mean, my girlfriend's come to see you cause she, I mean, we think she fell on her tailbone like on the ice last year, and her back's been like kind of just fucky ever since. And she went to see you once and was like, I think I'm fixed. Like it was just tailbone pain, you know, like coccyx
issue. That's some woo-woo.
Yeah.
I don't fucking know.
She hit me on the head with a book and said, you are cured.
No. And I'm good now.
But it did like really blow her mind. Like because she was having so like, you know, and that tailbone pain was like radiating through her low back, and it was causing all these other problems. And her osteopath was like, maybe you should see a pelvic floor physiotherapist. And like even today she was like, my back hasn't hurt since I've seen Stephanie. Like it's so, you know, it's such a broad spectrum of things to go see.
It presents in so many different ways. Yeah. Like so many people come in with chronic back pain or chronic hip pain, and they've had their back treated and their hip treated, but it's still temporarily better, but still never really gone. And the pelvis is like the fulcrum. It's like your whole upper body rests on it. Your whole lower body depends on it. So if something is messed up in your pelvis, it's going to affect things like above and below.
Is there a risk of over-strengthening your pelvic floor?
Yep. So that's when sometimes we can see like too much tension. So even if there's way too much tension in the pelvic floor, you could have pain with intercourse. You could still have stress incontinence, like that running, coughing, sneezing. And that's why some elite athletes will have it, because they're just so strong everywhere. Pelvic floor is also really strong. So I'll often explain it to people, like if you imagine shrugging your shoulders and holding them up in that position, and then I asked you to do a shoulder shrug, like you are not going to have any room to go any further. So they're like so tight in that position, and then they go to do a Kegel and it's like there's nothing left.
I can't release. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So then that's a lot of teaching, like, you know, relaxing and lengthening pelvic floor.
One thing that you said that made me a little bit sad is people laughing and because of that, like, they're incontinent, they pee themselves.
Yeah.
I have this like running tally throughout my life of, you know, make someone laugh so that they spit water out of their mouth. Make someone laugh and they fart audibly. Make someone laugh and they pee themselves. And like, I've done most of these things, but now I'm like, when that person peed because I made them laugh, was that really me? Or did they just have a fucking pelvic floor that just like, yeah, just a weak
you
pelvic
just triggered
floor.
A pelvic floor issue.
Now you're like, I know what you need.
I don't think you should still, like, the fact that you even
found
them in
the crowd.
And then
you could give him a kickback.
Should I
for
still?
For all the patients that you, that he sends you when he makes them laugh and pee.
My tally is
still count it, yeah. You're identifying the ones with weak pelvic floors.
That's right. Yeah, I'll still count it.
Sick Boy Podcast will be right back after this very short break.
Hi, I'm Jessie Cruikshank.
Jessie Cruikshank.
I host the number one comedy podcast called Phone a Friend.
Girl, let's phone a friend.
Not only do I break down the biggest stories in pop culture with guests like Dan Levy and members of NSYNC, I do it with my own personal boy band singing jingles throughout. Because it's my show.
It's your show, girl.
New episodes of Phone a Friend.
Yeah.
Drop Thursdays wherever you get your podcasts.
So work it, girl. Yeah, work it.
Okay, that's enough.
Know someone who might be struggling with their mental health? You can help. As a listener of Sick Boy, you know that we've been having these types of combos forever now. You'll also know that sometimes we make mistakes, and that's okay. We're human. Supporting someone through struggle in their life isn't easy. It's an art, not a science, and we all make mistakes. That being said, we can do our best to prep by educating ourselves. And our friends over at jack.org have created a resource for just that. Check out bethere.org for more information. Let's create a world where we can all better support one another.
When you talk about, Brian asked a question about about over strengthening, and I hear in your language more around like the tension. Like, I didn't realize until my partner was telling me about like all the people that she knows, all the women that she knows who have like a lot of pain when they have sex. And like for some of them, it's, you know, we did the episode on vaginismus, and then I was like, I think that might be what's going on. Like, is that it? And now we're talking about the pelvic floor and how that can, I mean, what is the link there between vaginismus and pelvic floor tension? Huge. Like, are they one in the same? Like, if you're going to say that I have vaginismus, are you really saying that you have a, your pelvic floor has like massive tension in it that can't be released, or it's very challenging?
But it could be from, like, vaginismus released. Could also just come from, like, that, that could be from like psychological trauma too, right? Like, it's not just.
No.
Your pelvic floor is too tight. Like, so that
what vaginism is. So, okay, if, before we do this, can we just do one thing that's going to be really funny?
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely.
So, I'm going to say three words, and then I want you guys to say them after.
Okay, all right.
Okay. Ready?
Yeah.
Vulvodynia vestibulodynia vaginismus.
Oh, vulvodynia vestibulodynia. Vulvodynia vestibulodynia vaginismus.
Vulvodynia vestibulodynia vaginismus.
Was that close?
Yeah.
Did you get it?
You did.
You even got like the
I just, you know. I heard you just like, I heard you repeat the same thing twice. That's what I heard. Can you say it again?
Vulvodynia.
Vulvodynia vestibulodynia.
Vaginismus.
Vulvodynia vestibulodynia vaginismus.
Yeah.
If you're not saying this at home to yourself right now, then you're not.
Turn off our podcast.
You're not actually listening.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's just say what vaginismus is. So vaginismus is like a terror of penetration.
Terror?
Like a terror, like you're terrified.
Yeah,
of
right,
penetration.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Horror?
Yeah, horror.
On the horror show. Terror? Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, I was like, what?
So, yeah, it's literally like a subconscious, not an ability to control that contraction. So the entrance of the vagina literally contracts and closes. It closes so tightly that penetration can be impossible for some people. And it's a subconscious thing. They're not trying to do it. Mm-hmm. It's just so ingrained that it happens without really thinking about it. So for that, yes, there's like a ton of tension right at the entrance of the vagina and oftentimes internally as well. But so it is purely tension.
Okay.
A vulvodynia is more... So when we say vulva... Vulva is literally like the area of the vagina that you're looking at when you're looking at a vagina.
From the outside.
Assume you all have probably.
Yeah.
Right? So the area that you see is the vulva. The mm-hmm. vagina is what's inside. Mm-hmm. We just call it the vagina.
Right.
So vulvodynia is literally like, could be anywhere in that area. Like anywhere, like labia, right at the opening of the vagina, towards the perineum. Like it's very generalized. And vestibulodynia is if we think of where the entrance of the vagina is and then the labia minora, which is like the smaller lips of the vagina. In between the entrance of the vagina and the labia minora, that's where the vestibule is. And any
I thought
pain
you
there.
Said Lady Aminora, and I was like, whoa, there's a part of the vagina called the Lady Aminora?
Labia minora.
Labia minora.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you need anatomy. You need to know these things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the labia majora are the big lips of the vagina where the pubic hair grows.
It's Latin.
Yeah. The labia minora is the smaller.
I'm familiar with the labia. I just was like, what is the Lady Aminora?
Well, Lady Aminora is in third season of Game of Thrones, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, so vestibulodynia is more like directed just at that small little area.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like the difference between them. And for some people, that pain is there all the time. For other people, it's provoked. So it doesn't, they're fine all day until something touches that area. So it could be a tampon, it could be penetration from mm-hmm. something.
That's PVD.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Or it could be literally for some people, it's as simple as like a tight seam on a pair of pants or underwear that's too tight. So. Mm.
Wow. So it's just like a sensory sort of like something might, you know, be close to it, touch it, and then like that
pain.
That reaction, just pain.
Yeah.
How do you... Sorry to cut you off.
I was going
to
say, I've had people that literally haven't been able to go to school or to work because that pain is so severe that like they just can't function.
How do you, as a pelvic floor physiotherapist, how do you practice internal exams when you're starting out? Like, do you do it on yourself, or do you find like willing participants that are like, sure, like you can internally exam me? Like, do you do it with your classmates? Like,
yep,
really?
Yeah, wow. We all do it on each other.
Wow.
Yeah. Whoa.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's
that is a good question.
It's what you would do. Yeah. It's what you do in you know, if you're a massage therapy,
yeah,
like
physio
you,
school,
you
we practice everything.
Palpate
on
each other. Yeah. So wow, that's so
sorry,
fascinating.
What did you just say?
Palpate.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a big
thought
word.
Thought you said something else.
Is it?
What do you think I said?
Is it uncomfortable? Like I
thought you said
I know
it in each other. And I was like, that's crass.
I just try to ignore those side conversations sometimes. Is it awkward and weird at first?
I was very nervous. So I wasn't going to do this. So like side note, I am like a germaphobe. I'm like super OCD. I know you guys have had episodes on that, but like legit. So for me to like dive into like, okay, I'm going to do internal exams. Like it was a big thing for me to go that route, but I was so passionate about it because I've dealt with so many issues personally, and I was just like, more women need to know this. So I was nervous as hell to go on my first course, knowing that all these internal exams were going to be done, and I was literally 3 months postpartum when I went on my first course.
Are there male pelvic floor physiotherapists?
I have never been on a course with one. There has been male pelvic floor physios, and there have been some on the course. So if that's the case, there's women on the course that have to agree to having that male physio perform internals. So we do everything on each other, and the instructor has to demonstrate on one of us. So I've literally been the model.
Whoa.
At the front of the class.
Oh, yeah.
And when you're doing that, are you like what's the privacy or None. Lack thereof?
None.
None.
No, we use a towel. So This is how the course starts. You go in.
I mean, I guess privacy in a way needs to be sort of like, for the sake of the learning aspect of everything,
you got to remove that aspect. It's got to be like, this is a human body.
Right.
This is anatomy. People have vaginas.
Right.
Here
That's
we go.
Literally how we look at it.
Remove even, the societal stigma around sexual organs.
It's really cool when like we're able to, because it's so weird. Like sometimes I think about the difference in the way that we look at naked bodies in the Western world versus like Europe, for example, and like. In Europe, you can go into like these co-ed spas where they're clothing optional and people are just not weird about it.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting how like as a society in North America, we've become like fearful of being naked in front of one another.
Mm. Yeah.
And like, of course, there has to be that element of like feeling sexy when you're naked too. But then also there has to be that like, not
we are so disconnected.
Take away the weirdness of like being naked around each other too.
Well, there's deep roots in like our the colonial, like how we all come to be here in North America in terms of, you know, like European, you know, like and religion and like everything that kind of happened when people come over here is like, I mean, that's like one of the things about like European colonialism here is like that they were like trying, there was like people that one of the ideas was that they're trying to get away from like the openness of Europe, and that Europe was like too much, like too crazy.
But it's also been amplified by modern media and the way that they make people feel ashamed of the way that they look.
Yeah,
very much so as well. Yeah, and that goes into it. Yeah, that's a big, I guess, in a more modern context, that's probably more of the reason. But I feel its roots go way back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we like, even in physio school, we have to sign documents saying we're okay with disrobing, because most of physio school, you're literally in a bra and like shorts because we do everything on each other. So in these courses, like, you know, you kind of start off the course, like you go in the room, you take your pants down, you put your little towel over. By the end of the course, like you're literally taking your pants off in front of like multiple people and hopping up on the bed. And we have to be the demonstrators so that the instructor can show everyone how to do these exams. So like at one point I was one of these models with like 18 girls, you know, staring down at you spread eagle on a bed. And it's just, I don't know. It's not weird because we're all there for the same purpose.
Yeah.
And the lens and the context of what you're doing is not like, it has nothing to do with what we typically think of in society of when we think about like, sexual organs, like we're just not thinking of them in the context of sexuality. We're like,
This is anatomy,
and there's problems here, and we want to solve them.
Yeah.
Was it challenging to learn? Because obviously you can't just stick your head in and look around and go, oh yeah, I kind of see it. Like you have to turn your hands into your eye, like into all your senses, right?
Yeah.
Like, was it a challenge for you to learn that language with your hands inside a vagina and inside, you know, a rectum, like? To feel for the things that you're looking for. Cause you know, it's like, okay, you're practicing on classmates or, you know, your instructors practicing on you, but like you don't have vaginismus or, you know, your classmates don't have pelvic organ prolapse, perhaps. Maybe you did. Okay, sure. Yep. There you go. So, like, is it when you got into the real world, like, was it kind of, did you feel like you were kind of going into it blind?
And a little bit. I mean, there's such a variety of people on the course. Like, I literally found out I had 2 prolapses on my course.
Whoa. So you learned about it. Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Well, what's that? What was that like, realizing that?
It was surprising. Like, I legitimately didn't know that that was happening. And I think probably a lot of women don't notice because so many people don't look down there. Like, yeah. I tell all my clients, like, regularly look at your vagina. Like, get on the bed, get out a mirror, look at it, because if something is different, like, how are you ever going to know if you don't know what it looks like right now? Mm-hmm. Like,
was it a moment for you where it was kind of like a, but that does explain things?
Yeah,
you
know, definitely. Like a, the pressure.
Did the person doing the exam were like, oh, by the way, like, you have 2 prolapse?
Yeah, it was my instructor, actually, that told me. And it was just great to know, because I knew she was, like, one of the best in Canada that was, like, looking at me. And so I felt, like, privileged to have learned it from her and learned what to do at that time. But, you know, we had another particular girl on our course that did have a lot of pain with intercourse. So being on that course, I'm sure it was like, oh, my gosh. And we had women who were menopausal. Like, we did have women on the course that were at such varying stages that did have issues.
Right.
So that part was great. And then, yeah, a lot of it you learn as you're going, like, when you see different things. But I think having practiced as a physio for, you know, quite a few years before going into this, is especially, like, all physios, we have to palpate everything. So we have to be able to feel, if you come in with a sore elbow, we have to be able to feel around your elbow and know, does that feel normal? Does that feel tight? Does that, like, we still look for trigger points. We still look for stuff in tissue. So my, like, tactile sensation in my hands were already there, and it was just, you can't see it. No, but we know the anatomy inside and out.
Right.
So there's certain landmarks that we're looking for. There are things we're looking for when we're doing an internal. And I probably, very weirdly to many of my clients, I close my eyes sometimes during internals, because then you can focus sometimes. Mm. Like, I will just kind of close my eyes for a second. Yeah, that's exactly where I am. And don't do it so much then, but definitely if I'm do a lot of stuff with core as well, and women who might have, like, separation of their core muscles. And oftentimes when I'm palpating their core, I always close my eyes, because if I'm looking at it, I'm seeing something different than if my eyes are closed and I'm literally just feeling it.
Yeah. And there is something to the idea that when you, like, that your other senses become more sensitive when you take maybe an unnecessary one of them away.
Yeah.
Like, we did the night walk the other night. We were at Windhorse Farm. We do a night walk every time we're there. We go in the dark. We walk these trails at pitch black. And, I mean,
terrifying.
It is.
It's amazing.
Wild what your senses get up to when you can't see. And you still have to navigate your surroundings.
I weirdly closed my eyes while I was walking in the dark.
Right. Because, like, your eyes serve such little purpose, that your ears and smell and sound and touch, and how, you know, how the ground sounds and feels underneath your feet tell you about your surroundings, where you're going, what direction.
Eyes are useless. I'm curious to know, we've talked about people with vaginas. Why would a man maybe perhaps want to see a pelvic floor physiotherapist? I mean, if a man's pissing himself when he laughs or can't, is scared to fart, maybe go. But are there any other reasons why someone might want to go see?
So there are men that have pain with intercourse. Erectile dysfunction is another one that people can come to pelvic floor physio for. And then probably, like, one of the biggest is any prostate issues.
Oh, yeah, right.
So if someone's had prostate cancer or prostatectomy, if you've had a prostatectomy, the rates of, like, erectile dysfunction and leakage, like urinary leakage in those men, is pretty significant.
Right.
Then there's lots of men that also have tailbone pain. Like, if you've fallen on your tailbone, chances are, like, your pelvic floor is gonna get hurt the same as a woman. So for men, it's rectal. Like, rectal.
Yeah, I was gonna say, rectal.
Wanted to ask. Yeah. So we still palpate on the outside and, like, touch the outside of the body too, but.
You sure you can't just, like, go in through the urethra and just,
oh,
like,
oh, God, that's called sounding.
Yeah.
You want very dainty little physio fingers.
What is the average difference in comfort level between men and women when you see them?
I personally don't see men. I only see women. Okay. So I wouldn't be able to say, but I think the majority of men that are going to pelvic floor physio, like, the issues they're dealing with are so life affecting that
that it doesn't.
And most of them, I mean, if you've been through prostatectomy, like you've had some pretty intrusive things done. So
and so you mean that in the way that you know a woman might see a pelvic floor physio for like any number of reasons, ranging from like you know
sore tailbone,
severe to very severe, obviously, but men tend to on average see a pelvic floor physio because there's a very serious, like it's more common for a man to see one if the thing is
If there's been like surgery or like say anything with the prostate or erectile dysfunction, and there are young men out there that have like a lot of pain with intercourse in and around the muscles of that area, so there is men that seek it for that reason too, which isn't as serious as like a prostatectomy. But
so when I woke up today, this is the story I wanted to tell you guys.
Oh god.
When I woke up today,
sore boner,
I for a second I was like, maybe I should see a pelvic floor physiotherapist, but I don't actually think I should. I'll just tell you the story. Last night,
was this the thing that you were gonna tell me?
I was
earlier,
gonna tell you,
I asked you to tell me, and then you wouldn't.
Yeah.
Okay.
So last night I was asleep, as I usually am at night, and I had this dream that I was in the IWK, the Children's Hospital here in Halifax.
Oh, you were going to tell me the story while we were at our dear friends, our late best friends' room dedication opening.
The family room, yeah, dedicated to, in memory of our friend Brandon who passed away with cancer. I chose not to tell you this story at the open house of that room with his family there. So I'm in the IWK in my dream last night, and not to like go too far into dreams because that's always fucking boring, but in this dream, very important part of it, I had to go to the bathroom really badly. And so I go into the bathroom, and actually this is kind of weird.
Oh no,
this
dude,
is
you peed the bed.
Hold on, this is a weird part of the dream. The bathroom, all the stalls were only 3 feet high, and there were only stalls, and I went into one stall and I sat down because I had to take a shit, and I was sitting down to shit in the bathroom stall, and a guy walked in and we were having a conversation. And I was thinking to myself, like, this is, you know how like when you're taking a shit, a lot of times it's like, this feels so good, like the feeling of having a poop oftentimes feels really good. And I was going, this feels so good. And then I woke up and I went, whoa. And I went, whoa, I think I almost just took a shit.
Whoa.
And then I was like, that's crazy.
I don't think I've ever taken a shit in a dream.
And then I said that too. I was like, I don't think I've ever dreamt about shitting. And then I was like, well, time to go back to sleep. Cause it was like fucking 3 a.m. And like in my head, I'm going, you're sleepy. Go back. And then I go, no, I should probably just like get up and go to the bathroom. So I got up, went to the bathroom, sat down.
Such an odd time to have to go to the bathroom.
So weird, right? Yeah. So sat down, took a poo. And as I got up to like get ready to go back to bed, I was like, I was really close to shitting. Like too close. And I looked down at my underwear.
No, you had a little brown beetle.
I shat in my pants. I had a little bit of shit in my pants.
Yeah, a little skin.
And I was so sad. Dude, I sulked back to the bed.
But that's not a pelvic, that's just a psychological, you know, you in your mind, your subconscious.
Let's ask the professional here. Should I go see someone?
Were you drinking?
Well, no, so here's the thing. yes and no. Like I wasn't like drinking crazy, but I had a couple.
You were kind of drunk when you dropped my phone off. You yelled something at me that made me think, because you weren't when we were at the bar, but then I left and you were there for another 45 minutes or an hour. And then you dropped the phone off and you yelled something at me when I was walking away from the car, and I went,
I didn't drive the car. Becca drove me.
Becca was driving. Becca was driving. You're in the passenger seat. You yelled something at me, and I literally to myself, I went, Daddy's drunk.
Okay. Was Jeremy drinking? Come on.
I had a few pints, but I wasn't.
You weren't hammered.
No.
Just a regular night.
However, I am taking really strong antibiotics. And one of the antibiotics, very specifically,
causes diarrhea.
Yes, causes diarrhea. I forget the antibiotic that I'm on, but it's like a combination of two pills in one pill.
The antibiotic causes diarrhea, or if it's a symptom of.
Yes, it causes diarrhea, the antibiotic. So I mean, I'm kind of chalking it up to that.
Yeah.
But I also was like, do I just have like, because I've had abdominal surgery, so I'm like, do I just have like really weak? But I don't really, although I don't trust farts the way I used to since my surgery either.
Well, so I feel like that's the thing about getting older though too. You just, he can't, like the more you gamble, the more likely you are to
sometimes
lose.
Sometimes I go through periods where I'll go where for like, for whatever reason, like I'm not sick, I don't have diarrhea, but for like a week, I can't trust. And yeah. I'm like, it'll go on for long enough where I go, is this my new normal?
Wait, how many times have you shit yourself in 1 week?
Oh, no, I don't ever shit myself. That's what I'm saying. But
how do you know you can't trust it for a week?
Because there's a difference. You feel it. It's a feeling.
I get
dude,
it.
And you end up farting and it's fine. But like, there's a few seconds leading up to it where you're going, oh, fuck, dude, I'm gambling. This is a gamble for sure.
Yeah.
I'm going to the roulette table and it could be red or black.
And here's another thing that might be telling of whether or not I should go see someone. Sometimes now, like, and again, it's been since I've been like really sick. So I've been basically taking fuckloads of antibiotics for like the last month and a half. But sometimes now I'll be peeing, standing up peeing. I don't normally sit down to pee. So I'll be standing, peeing. And as I'm peeing, I'll be like, oh, no, 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 no. Like, because I just feel like I'm about to shit myself. And I got to go into, like, mad control area. But I pinch off the pee, and that hurts. And like,
yeah, it stings.
So, anyway.
Look at the conversation you've stimulated, Stephanie.
I feel like the answer is yes.
Ah, fuck. Oh, God damn it.
Yeah.
That's such a professional's opinion, though.
She said at the beginning. That was the very first question. You said, who should see a pelvic floor physio? And she said, everyone.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, that's because she makes money off of it.
Yeah, it's a conspiracy theory. Yeah.
She's like, I say I don't see men, but I'll see you. Come on in. Yeah. I charge double.
I think, okay, so anytime you've had an abdominal surgery,
yeah,
we talk about core as like literally just being like your core muscles, like your six pack muscles. But really, your core is the diaphragm at the top, your core muscles in the middle, your pelvic floor at the bottom, and your multifidus, which is like a little muscle that runs up the spine. That's your core. So like that cylinder. So if you've had an abdominal surgery,
even laparoscopic,
that's not as big, but you still has had something go through your core, which can disrupt how it functions. Plus you cough all the time.
All the time, yeah.
Right? So that's constant pressure on your pelvic floor. So
is when you're that, when you were kind of describing the core there, and it is commonly misunderstood that your core is like sort of that belt area right around the whole body, not just on your abdomen. And you know, when people have chronically poor posture, and you know, they slouch at their upper back, which makes their pelvis tilt posteriorly, and you know, they kind of get that hunch going on, and then that is stretching out the muscles on their back, which is obviously leading to a less engagement in the back and a tightening in the front. Is a lack of like, is bad posture, can that lead to basically just, you know, not being able to control or lack of control when it comes to the pelvic floor?
100%. Yeah. You need like good functioning diaphragm, good breath control, good core function, good pelvic floor function. So if something is off in that and there is something with posture, then it, for sure it affects the way the pelvic floor is sitting.
Like, and I guess that just brings me back to like, you know, I was 20 when I started practicing yoga, and I didn't, and I was an athlete before that playing hockey, but I never really paid much attention to posture or anything like that. Until I started doing yoga, which is like, basically everything you just said, like it's core awareness, it's breath awareness, it's posture awareness, it's all these things. And the pelvic floor is also a really big theme throughout yoga practice, core and pelvic floor. Is that, you know, not for like an advert for yoga or anything, but like that, but from your end, but is yoga something that, you know, you would go, I know you said, you know, you practice, and is that something that you would recommend to somebody who, you know, might just need like a tune up around like some lifestyle, like in lifestyle thing to kind of fix some of their issues?
And with so many pelvic floor, I probably see more people that deal with tension in the pelvic floor. So a big part of that is also like calming down the central nervous system. So that breathing and that awareness and that mindfulness that comes from yoga. I have some training in yoga too, so I incorporate it almost daily in my practice. So I often will send people like to yoga or Pilates, something that they're really functioning and looking at posture and breath control and core control. And so 100%, I'd use both of those exercises almost daily.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
I feel like there's a bit of like buzz around pelvic floor right now. And I've been hearing more about it lately. Mm-hmm. But with anything that starts to become more popular, I find that there's a lot of like misinformation and stigma around something like that.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you've heard commonly or that is a common misconception that you can shine a little bit of light on for people who are listening to this?
As far as
like, is there like stigma towards the pelvic floor, misconceptions that you'll hear people come into your office and talk to you and you're like, actually, no, it's not actually like that.
Yeah. I think probably one of the biggest misconceptions is that the Kegel will fix everything. Like people are like, just Kegel, I'll fix that. That Kegels will fix that. And that's probably the biggest misconception because most people aren't doing Kegels right. And most of the people that I see have to stop Kegeling and like focus on down training and relaxing their pelvic floor before they start to Kegel.
Yeah.
So I think Kegels are just thrown out way too often without actually like knowing everything that's going on.
Mm.
Sweet.
It is a lot harder to turn things off sometimes than it is to turn things on.
Mm-hmm.
I find that it takes much more brain power to tell something to relax than it does to flex something.
It's like me in dance class.
Yeah. You
know, I've been doing these dance classes lately.
We were talking about this before we started recording.
I haven't had a chance to talk about it on the podcast yet. But like when I dance, I'm so stiff.
Yeah.
Ooh. Like I'm just so
used to
it.
You're doing the robot and they're like, we're not doing the robot.
I also want to say, I say how bad I am at dance. I'm not good. But like, I feel like I'm not that
bad.
Yeah,
right. You're learning how to do it.
But I'm definitely stiff and it's just because I'm so used to engaging all of my muscles that like when I try to move like fluidly.
Are you doing this because you know that you're like very soon about to be a father and you don't want to dance like a dad? Like you'd rather not be like,
I'm so cautious like when I'm bringing up Maddie's stories and Maddie's experience, like to like not like I don't want to say number one, because I know that you guys will fucking say something. but I don't want to like misconstrue like the information from her story and her experience, but she's not fucking pregnant.
He really? Said no. With conviction.
At least not anymore.
Oh, Jesus Christ, Brian.
That was a bad joke. I had to say, it's one of those things that come in your head.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with abortion. That's okay. That's not a bad joke necessarily. Yeah. And if, you know. It's not. And you know, it's funny that you said that because I don't think you got
an abortion joke.
Yeah, well,
you kind of were.
You should have saved it for.
That's how I took it
for tomorrow.
Oh man, Donovan, cut the end.
No, don't leave it, Donovan. Because tomorrow we're actually talking to a guest who about abortion. So this is perfect timing. Yeah. Okay. Good job, Brian. Good job for making an abortion joke.
Hey, Maddie.
Unbelievable.
I'm sorry. We just won't talk about you on the podcast anymore.
Stephanie, this has been a treat. I'm so stoked that you were down to come and talk to three guys who like clearly don't know much about much, but are always down to talk about the female anatomy and the importance of the things that a lot of people just don't know.
Yeah.
Because I truly do feel like this is one of those episodes that our listenership is very leans very much more female than male. And so I hope that this conversation maybe opens up some like doors or opens up some people's minds to something that might actually really benefit their overall health.
Yeah.
And so for that, I thank you very much for coming in and chatting with us.
Well, thank you guys for having me. It's just nice to get the information out there. And literally my passion since starting this is just to like educate women. I just want people to know that it's out there and that there's help for it and things that we think are normal are not normal. They're really common, but there's people out there that can help. So,
and where do you work?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where do you work out of? What's your clinic? How can people find you?
So I work out of Choice Health Center. We have two locations, one in Dartmouth and one in Halifax. So I can be found online. Like if you just Google Stephanie Brown or Google Choice Health Center. And then if you aren't in this area and you're looking for, a pelvic floor physio, if you're in Canada, if you go to, womenshealthcpa.com, there's literally a list of practicing pelvic floor physios all over Canada, and it'll pop up the ones that are closest to you. And literally for anyone else outside of Canada, like if you go on and Google pelvic floor physiotherapy wherever you live, you're going to get people that pop up. So just if you have something that's going on, just know that you can go online and find someone. You don't have to go to a doctor to get a referral.
Sweet. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was really fun. And thank you all so much for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed it. As always, we'll be back next week with another fascinating episode, probably about abortion, to be honest with you. And in the meantime, if you want to support the podcast, there's a number of ways you can do that. The first and the big one is go to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating and a review. And smash that subscribe button.
Dude, smash it. Smash it hard. And then you can smash your way on over to patreon.com/sickboy and become a patron. We got... We did a photo shoot the other day. We got some hilarious photos. We were thinking about doing a Christmas card for our patrons. I'm putting it out there because like if I say it, it'll make us more likely to do it.
Yeah,
we are doing it.
Okay, it's really, 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 really funny. So if you want one of the funniest Christmas cards you'll ever see in your whole entire life, then go to patreon.com/sickboy, become a patron, help us out, help us spread the word, help us talk to more people, tell more stories, and we will love you for it. We love you anyway, but we'll love you more, I guess.
And thanks as always to Donovan, the CPAP Morgan, for the amazing sound design on the show. Donovan, thanks for making it sound like we are in a, what's that, the guy Richard, the fucking workout guy?
Richard Simmons.
Thanks for making it sound like we're in a Richard Simmons workout video, but we're just focusing on pelvic floor.
A Richard Simmons music video that is taking place inside a vagina.
Yeah, exactly.
Whoa, that's going to be hard to do, Donovan. Good luck.
Well, he did make it sound like we were in styrofoam before, so I think anything is possible. Yeah. And also, thanks to our friends Be There, jack.org's Be There, and those guys are so great. They're providing this incredible resource online.
Is this episode coming out? Is this coming out on Monday?
No.
No.
No, this episode is coming out. No, this episode is coming out in a number of weeks.
Pretty close to Christmas.
Okay, never mind. Yeah. All good.
That polar bear tip that we did for Be There was great.
It was like really great that we're doing in the future and in the past at the same time.
I just wanted to say BeThere.org. If you know somebody struggling with mental health issues and you want to support them, BeThere.org has some incredible resources for that. So just go there and learn, because learning how to help somebody is an amazingly powerful and positive thing.
That is it for this week.
I'm Brian.
I'm Taylor.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Stephanie.
And this is Sick Boy.
Guest is Stephanie Brown. She talks about the importance of your pelvic floor. That's between your Habby Babby and your Doobie Doobie. Let's talk about it.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.